And now, our feature presentation.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Give It Five. I'm
your host, Grinch. It's not called Give It Five.
Whoa.
Fuck, no, it's not.
Whoa.
No, it's not. Damn it.
We already got branding, Connor. We paid someone.
Take two. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of No Flicks Given.
You almost forgot.
I did. For the people at home that aren't privy to the last take where I called the show Give It Five, I
but
was
Connor,
about to call
they
it
will
Fix
be
a Flick.
Privy to it because that's staying in for sure.
Fair enough, I guess. Welcome to No Flicks Given, the chimera of two podcasts formerly known as Fix a Flick and Give It Five. Joining me, as always, is my co-host from Fix a Flick, Peter York. Say hi, Peter.
Hi.
And from the Give It Five side, we have Frank. Frank, well, you guys don't do last names, do you?
We can. I don't care.
We have them.
Listening to your show for all those years, you guys never use last names, so I just wanted to be respectful of your anonymity.
I go by my.
We have no last.
I
names.
Go by my radio DJ name, Matty C. Come on.
But from Give It Five, we have Frank and Matt. Say hi, boys.
Hi, boys.
Hey.
For those that are just joining us, I just told that fucking story. I'm not a very good host of podcasts.
No, this is great because it's. I thought I did a bad job on the first episode, and I'm.
It's the sophomore slump.
Yeah, we are. We don't know what this is yet. We are figuring
it
out.
We don't know.
We are.
We don't
you
know
and I are the
is.
Guinea pigs of this kickoff. So don't. Let's not worry about it.
True. But in the broad strokes of what No Flicks Given is going to be. Each of us is going to bring a movie to the table that we will all watch and enjoy and then discuss. And this week, Peter, we pulled your name out of the hat, and I believe you have a movie for us to watch.
I do. I chose a movie. It's actually a recent movie, which I think is a little unusual for us. We tend to go back to you know, late 90s, early 2000s flicks. But this movie came out in October of 2021. And I hadn't had a chance to see it yet, and I'm not sure. So the movie is The Harder They Fall. It came out on Netflix. Are you guys familiar with it? Have you seen it?
I saw a great trailer for it, but I haven't seen it yet.
Only know it's a Western.
So for those who don't know it, it is a Western, entirely black cast. Completely stacked cast. I mean, the stars of this film are Jonathan Majors, Idris Elba, Zazie Beetz, Regina King, Delroy Lindo, Lakeith Stanfield, RJ Seiler, Danielle Deadwyler, Edie Gathegari, and Dion Cole. But I mean, really heavy hitters in this movie. I'm really excited to watch it. I think it'd be fun if we all could give it a watch and come back and talk about it.
Perfect excuse to watch a movie.
Let's do it.
Like I said, you can find it on Netflix. I think most of the people in North America have access to that. So give it a watch and come back for our conversation.
Open it.
Please.
On the head of an angel, sins of the father, dumping the dust about to kill you. Faithful to the end. Bullets with your names drew. Cock back, aim, shoot, bang.
I don't particularly enjoy violence. That being said, you are currently in company of extremely violent individuals.
Jump, mother. My guns go
bang. And we're back.
Yeah, cool. So I pitched this movie, The Harder They Fall. Stylistically, really cool movie. I came into this with fairly high expectations. I heard a lot of people on the internet talking about how this was a really solid movie. It wasn't making a ton of like top 10 lists or anything, but like a really good like it's a you know a weekend. It's a Sunday in. You know, in our case, it's a Sunday in the winter, and it would be cool to just like sit down and kill a couple hours watching a movie. this really scratches a lot of those itches. I think it's a really fun Western. I mean, what do you guys think? What were your sort of first impressions? Well, Frank, we'll go to you first.
Peter, I just want to ask before we give our impressions. When you pitched this, had you seen it? Or this was like, I want to watch it. We might as well watch it together.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it before either. Okay. So I'm coming in just as blind as everybody else. So, you know, it's kind of fun that all four of us are kind of coming to the table with really fresh takes. We haven't really talked to each other about it.
Yeah.
And it's still a new movie, so yeah.
So I'll kick us off if you want. Where I had heard the title. I think I had seen a screen grab on Netflix of Idris Elba, and that is it. I did not know the tone. I did not know the concept at all. And we just Amanda and I just watched it, threw it on, knowing nothing. I love this movie so much. I love this movie start to finish. I was so, maybe it's just because I expected something like totally different, like tonally. I thought I was walking into like a Oscar contender for Best Picture, and as great as it is, it's very interested in other things.
Yes.
I turned to Amanda at one point. I'm like, I think this is what Tarantino masturbates to.
Like, so my very first note, like 10 minutes into the movie, is that the most surprising thing about this film is that Tarantino is not involved in this movie at all. But yes, it's got his fingerprints all over it.
There aren't,
stylistically, musically, tonally, it's a very Tarantino-esque film.
Yeah, there aren't nearly enough feet for it to be an actual Tarantino production.
I knew I shouldn't have.
Hey, you brought that.
But I'll say, over the years, there's a whole genre of I'm trying to rip off Tarantino.
Yeah.
Movies, mm-hmm. And I think this stands above all the rest, unless there's an obvious one I'm not thinking of.
In recent memory,
I think this is definitely in the tradition of I am trying to rip off Tarantino, but it's elevated above that.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's also like, this has much more in common with Tarantino's latter day film, especially the westerns that he made, than the earliest form of I'm trying to rip off Tarantino, like 90s crime movies that were trying to rip off Pulp Fiction.
Much less like Guy Ritchie talky verbose, but much more from a stylistic and tone perspective. Like I don't think the dialogue is quite as good as most Tarantino movies, but from a style and a tone and a feel, it feels very much along that bloodline. Matt, what'd you think?
I enjoyed it. I liked it. It is for all of the things that it is doing differently, it is a very traditional Western.
Yes,
but I think that it hits all of the beats well. I don't think it's necessarily missing anything. And it's like the between the cast and also it was written, directed, and scored by the same person.
Wow.
Yeah, I was doing some research. James Samuel, who, if you don't know, is the younger brother of Seal, of Batman Forever fame.
No shit.
Wow.
Yeah. So he made his bones, you know, starting about 10 years ago, just producing music. And so, but between like the music and the cast, and just a fresh perspective on a classic sort of setup. I enjoyed it. It's also like the first 2+ hour movie I think I've watched in a long time, with the exception of maybe Dune.
Yeah.
That still kept my attention for most of it.
This felt so much shorter than the runtime to me. Like this, I felt like I couldn't believe we were at the ending already. It was one of those.
I think it's very paced like a West. Coming where I came from, it felt very much like a Western pace of, yes, this is going to be 2.5 hours, but I don't recall ever being immediately bored by anything that I was watching during that period of time, which is what makes a good Western versus a bad Western.
There were a couple things that I might have cut. Dragged. The third act especially, there were places that didn't pay off entirely for me, but I really enjoyed the film as well.
Oh, yeah. My biggest knock that bothered me about the movie is that it also did, in trying to be traditionalist in a certain respect, is that like they had a checklist of every Western trope and had to check off every single one of them. And before the end of the movie, I'm pretty sure they did. Like the last one they were missing was the white hat and the black hat are related, and we got that one right in the last reel. But like, yeah, so like that part was okay. I know exactly how this story is going to end from go, but I'm along for the ride and I'm enjoying the ride because I would watch Idris Elba and Regina King read the dictionary and I would sit there and just is in awe.
Did anyone check? Is this the first film that those two are in together?
I did not check.
Idris Elba and Regina King?
I don't know.
Because they have like power couple written all over them. Like,
yes.
Like, I would watch a movie where they are like just like husband and wife, like going through normal life and like something crazy happens.
Or imagine
to them. Like,
I was going to say, imagine like Mr. and Mrs. Smith with the two of them.
Yes. Oh, holy shit. I would love that.
Yeah. No, they're great together. The idea of all the gangs and everything is great. The plot is secondary to everything else. But like I said, it's a ride, and I'm along for the ride, and I am totally there for it.
Connor, what'd you think?
I had seen the trailer, which is an excellent trailer if you're a fan of trailers. Really loved the first third of this movie. Like it's like I would watch the first third of this movie over and over and over again, introducing all the characters and getting to know the world. After that, it kind of falls a little flat for me. The energy, the first third of the movie to me sort of promises an energy that does not follow through for the rest of the movie. Which may not be the kind of movie that they were trying to make. But I was kind of primed to be in this space of just like a bunch of crazy shit happening all the time. And it very much slows down and can't maintain that. So it kind of, as a result, it kind of lost me during my watch. Yeah. You know, and I agree generally with what you guys have said heretofore.
I think it's worth noting in all of this that this film began production in March of 2020.
Ooh, fuck. Oh,
so they started shooting and you know, as the pandemic kicked off, they finished in September of 2020, I believe. So, you know, it took them a long time to just get through COVID so I'm guessing that affects some of the third act. I don't know if they were shooting in any way chronologically, but there are certain pieces of this movie where they certainly clear out a lot of people pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially in the last third. And you know, anything that would have been a group scene or a larger scene perhaps, all of a sudden is very stripped down.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up because it does feel like there are kind of two different movies in here. Direction wise, specificity wise, and energy wise.
Yeah. And I think if you're on a
And look-wise.
If you're on a project for that long, your own eye is going to be changing over the course of that time. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about 6 months. So probably by the time that you're in month five, what you had in mind is either different or you want it to be a little different than what you had in mind in month one or in previs or whatever.
I think the two best examples of kind of looking at that kind of side-by-side are the train sequence and the final shootout at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
The train
That's
sequence
exactly
for,
what I was thinking about.
The train sequence for me is one of my favorite film sequences that I've seen in the past year. It's so good. There's like that 20-minute stretch of just like watching the gang kind of ride over the bluff and seeing Regina King just standing playing chicken with a train on train tracks.
And knowing that she's going to win.
Oh, that was
man, is that good. I am loving this like revitalization of Regina King. I need a lot more Regina King in my life. Between this and Watchmen, she's awesome.
Which I almost feel like the decision to leave her character alive at the end of the film was more just about like Regina King than anything else.
Yeah.
I don't want to get there quite yet because I've got a massive problem with that whole situation.
Well, anyway.
Did you guys have any favorite moments?
When I started to, because again, I turned this on still thinking it was going to be more of a serious, dramatic, I was like, okay, well, what it's like to be.
You're like, this is going to be the power of the dog, or like.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was going to be very serious. And like the opening scene happens and then it kicks off to like the church shootout. And I was like starting to like be like, okay, once once they have the title be like every word shows up on a different bullet, I was like, oh, I was very wrong about what this was going to be. And then I think pretty soon after that, it's Jonathan Majors riding into town, and the town is just like so vibrant and so like fake looking to such a heightened degree where I'm like, oh shit. He goes in the saloon and everything's exaggerated and every single character is black. The entire...
the primary cast.
The entire cast. And... But it's also like it's not being like called out in a way where he's at a specific place that's why like there's no like that's why it's just oh
is.
No, this is just what the movie's going to be like. It's just focused on this. They're not going to call attention. They're just going to have make an awesome Western with this cast of characters. And I was just so like excited for the ride of it, where it's like it's not as commentary based as I thought it might be. With the concept that it was trying to do, it's more just like, no, we're gonna have an awesome time with a great action scene and all these characters that are like so fleshed out and like and
Frank,
like the amount of what
I was just, did you take a bathroom break when they go to rob the white bank in the white town?
That was I laughed so fucking hard. That was pretty late.
Everything's
in the movie,
just
though,
bleach white.
Where the town is just bleach white. It's so
there's a foot of snow outside, or not a foot of snow, but a dusting of snow outside.
Like they pass salt flats. It's
amazing. But before that,
it's in that tongue in cheek thing.
Yes. And before that, it's just like, I don't know. I was just like the amount of one-on-one relationships all of these characters have with each other, where so many have in jokes with different other people. It's not just a main character and all these other things. Like, Jonathan Majors is like, fucking cool as shit as like the main gunslinger guy, but how many other characters get to like the amount of banter, even with that Wayne's brother that's in it, like for a scene or two, like he gets to everyone's fucking with each other.
Yeah.
And the dialogue is so antagonistic in a refreshing way, and it's just like the word I kept coming to was just cool. It's just like such a cool movie. And it's just so confident in how much fun it wants to have.
Any movie that has Lakeith Stanfield or Idris Elba or Regina King, or is that like you only need one of them to up the coat? Like, and you've got all of these people with this like incredible cool meter.
It's a very Rat Pack Ocean's 11 type thing where it's just just packed.
Which. If they redid this movie and made Ocean's 11 with it, I would 100% watch that.
Oh my god,
too.
Can you imagine?
This is Desert 11.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking about that movie. Sorry.
Well, but so on top of this too, it was reported that Cynthia Erivo was supposed to be in this movie. Wesley Snipes, Sterling K. Brown were all tied to this movie until
all we're missing
COVID
is Keith David at this point.
I think they're making another one and getting. I think it's going to be like they have to make a sequel to
Do
this.
Do we know? Well, because I know it got a limited release and then it ended up on Netflix. Do we know if it did like any like financial box like classical box office business or like do we?
It made $8,000 in theaters. I mean, it didn't have a theatrical run. I think it was, it must have been a Netflix production kind of thing, because it had most of that was just festival stuff. I mean, like BFI screened it, but
which do you think they just did that so they could be considered for awards?
Of course.
And the Montclair Film Festival played it in October, like you know. But I think the plan was just to have it be on Netflix.
What was the last, because I was trying to think of this too, and think of all the Westerns that have come out since like 2000, where it's never just like a classic Western. It always has like a hook to it, either Cowboys and Aliens or Django Unchained had just the Tarantino hook. It can't be a classic Western because like he's such a force in it where it's like a Tarantino version of it. But like what?
It also takes place in the South. It's a southern
movie. What is the last like really very traditional, classic, structured Western movie that doesn't have like
the one I immediately think of is 310 to Yuma.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's probably
for
it.
For me,
True Grit came out a few years after
that. But True Grit
that.
Is still very much the a Coen. Very Coen Brothers Western.
Yeah, that's yeah. why. Yeah.
To me, have any of you guys seen, I think it's called Appaloosa with Ed Harris and Viggo
Mortensen? I was
going to
bring up Appaloosa,
that
yeah.
one, that yeah. one is like classic Western to a fault. I enjoy yeah. it, but it is 2.5 hours long. It is slow paced and you are just looking at vistas.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great movie, but yes, totally.
And a lot of like Westerns don't really see are like built for streaming now. Cause I mean, it's the same thing if they're cheap to make.
But also most Westerns that they will make, like there's a lot more Appaloosas than there are like, The Harder They Fall, where it's like way more Westerns now. They're like, okay, well, if we're going to do it, we have to go the John Ford route more than the Sergio Leone route. And right. that's another thing that was just like, oh my God, when was the last time we got like a like wink at the audience because of how cool this like fast draw shot was or something? Like it's just, it's very like, it's just, it was so nice to not see a superhero movie that has like this level of like superhuman coolness to it.
You know what? Actually, this movie reminded me a lot of the paintball, the Western paintball episode of
Community.
Of Community.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah,
because it's similar in that like the action scenes are all very specific. It has like the heightened elements of spaghetti Westerns, because I don't think spaghetti Westerns ever looked the way that we think spaghetti Westerns look. That's kind of it just goes back to Community to me.
I think it's also that like trying to hit the marks of getting like some of the tropes are getting subverted, but hitting like we have to have the who's the quickest draw in the West moment. We have to have like, and just making sure that you hit those beats.
And that stuff really kind of bogged the movie down for me. Cause they wind up sort of taking over for the character. So it's like the characters stop making choices for themselves and start pursuing what the tropes say they should be doing, especially like after the first third. After the first third of the movie, everybody's so wonderfully drawn, like you were saying, and specific, and you know who all these characters are and what their relationships are to each other. But kind of after Rufus Buck beats up the mayor sheriff guy and kicks him out of town, they start to like fall into the ruts of like what the character of what like movie tropes say these characters should be doing, as opposed to making choices and wanting things and pursuing them.
So, all right, we're not going to get out of this conversation alive. I feel like this just it's four white guys talking about this, but when I was watching it, that sort of stuff, the cliched elements was like all of these creative black filmmakers and actors, they're like, we want people that look like us to be doing these moments that we never got before. So the same way, like, I know a lot of people roll their eyes at like that moment in Endgame when all the female superheroes are in the same spot and they're all there, but like there's little girls that like love that moment and they get that hero shot, and there's a little bit of that okay, like we never got to be these cool gunslinger guys. Like, yes, we have to strike boxes you've seen before, but like there are people that haven't seen this before that now get to see people that look like them doing this cool stuff. So I think a lot of it is I came at it from that angle where it's like I am just so like thrilled that they just got to like have fun and it didn't have to be this big conversation about anything. They're just like, no, we want to be fucking awesome outlaws in like a Western and not think more about it than that.
Yeah. So, I completely agree with that. I just think they get less awesome when they're falling into.
There like, are ways to do like, it the, more like, effectively.
Right. I mean, and some of it's just like flaws in writing. Like there's no reason Zazie Beetz should have gone to.
Oh, that was dumb as hell.
Rufus Buck's.
That was
town
when
to get kidnapped. Like the whole movie after that, like the whole movie is basically predicated on Zazie Beetz
damsel in distress.
And it feels a little contrived. It feels a little It is both at the same time. The biggest problems I have with this movie are when it falls into the tropes, but when it tries to be too clever in getting out of the tropes.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see the strings a little bit. And for me, you know, I think that's a really good example, Connor. I mean, one of my favorite payoffs is when at the beginning of the third act, when they blow up the carriage and the guy's arm falls off. Like, I think that's a tremendous payoff. Yeah. And that's something that's immediately set up and immediately paid off. But on the flip side, something that happens right after that that I was really disappointed by was I wanted to see the quick draw showdown between the kid and Lakeith Stanfield. And getting the mouthy bullet through the head to me was such a letdown, because I wanted that moment of tension. Oh, it's just that. You and me. I get where people could take it either way.
The quick draw whole arc is, I think, the weakest one that they play out, because because the trope tells you from go, the kid with the mouth is going to get killed, because that's what happens in every Western. And for that to have not happened would have been to play around with how to make that not happen would be cool. Don't get me wrong, Cuffy is my favorite character in this entire film, and I'm glad that she got that moment at the end, because that's great. But I think it's also sort of the term that I can only think of is like the gumbification of Lakeith Stanfield's character. Of at first, he seems like a person who does actually dislike violence, but has rules that he plays by. But when we need him for the purpose of the story to disregard his entire code, he'll do it, because we need to get to the next moment. And so that part, that was something that took me out of the plot in the movie a little bit.
So let's talk about the plot a little bit, because we haven't really done that yet for as much as we've talked about it so far. So at its heart, I think this movie is a revenge story. You know, the opening scene is the young Nat Love, you know, watching his family get gunned down by Rufus Buck and his gang, and you're not really sure the relation, but it's obviously, you know, there is a past there that is not discussed. And then you immediately jump to the future, where older Nat Love, which as we said before, Jonathan Majors is cool as hell in this movie, just playing kind of a Robin Hood type, where he and his gang have a mission where they're going to steal from
other
gangs in the area. Yeah, they're Robin Hooding. They're after the rest of Rufus Buck's gang so that he can put that chapter of his life to bed and move on with his life. Meanwhile, Rufus Buck's gang is getting ready to break him out of prison. And at the end, there's a showdown where, you know, Nat Love and Rufus Buck have to meet and come to terms with who they are as people. So I think it's a really classic trope, and I think honestly, I think the overarching plot is really fun and really spot on for this movie. But it is those little details, like, you know, I know you mentioned at the end, Matt, the reveal of, you know, I'm actually your brother.
I
struggled a lot with that moment.
Yeah.
Am I the only one? Maybe I just haven't seen a Western in such a long time.
Oh,
where
that's a
I
trope.
Was like, That was one of those reveals. I know it's a trope, but when he was doing it, I just didn't expect it. And it was one of those moments where you just freeze and you're just like watching. Maybe
he talks about the eyes.
Really wanted.
That's the moment I knew when he, because it's like
when
the
he talks
eyes,
about the what?
When he's talking about their eyes being Idris Elba has a line about his eyes and how he's seen those eyes and like this. I was like, okay, so they're going to be related. So like that, yeah, and it didn't. It doesn't make sense for someone as ruthless, like, and his whole thing of like how this is the worst revenge is to turn his deadbeat dad's other son into a robber, but then he doesn't really become a robber in the way that Idris Elba would have wanted him to be the revenge that he was looking for. And the fact that it gets very contrived and convoluted at the end. And I was just like, all right, let's just shoot him a couple times and then, you know, be sad about it and we'll move on.
I felt very much the same way. I actually didn't know that I Was Your Brother the whole time was a trope in Westerns. It is a plot line that I always think is dumb.
Well, it's like they need it there to explain why Idris Elba just doesn't fucking kill this guy from start.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the only it's the only sort of easy explanation for it.
Where he's like, you know, you've become worse than me because you're gonna kill your own brother.
Hasn't.
But at the same time, he had his brother tortured.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like both mentally and physically, he's like, I'm going to torture, you know, your fiance. Yeah. I'm gonna torture you. But I'm a better person because I didn't kill you. And that's, I guess, what
makes him
still a bad
guy. I also killed your mother for no particular reason.
And your father.
Well, the father, I get. Like, he killed his father because his father was a bastard in a previous life.
Right.
Love's mother had nothing to do with any of that.
Very true.
And, like, the way to stop that cycle of violence is, you're going to have the revenge, and, yeah, maybe this kid's... But, like, you've literally just orphaned this kid and then carved a cross into his face so that you know where to find him later. Like it,
right.
That stuff, and like even as great as the train sequence is, the weird plot contrivance of like how Idris Elba is getting out of jail because he's got a pardon, but we're also going to use this as a weird
just break him
out of jail because we're going to kill these guys anyway because they did a bad thing a while ago.
Yeah,
fine. We need to get Idris Elba out of jail, and we want to do a cool sequence to do it. Let's put him on a train. Like we wanted this moment, and let's force the construction of the plot to create this moment, which is, you know, like I said, it's I'm along for the ride, so it doesn't bother me as much because it's fun to look at.
But they do it in ways that overcomplicates things for no reason. Like there's no reason that Buck needed a pardon. They could have just broken him out of jail. And if you gave him a pardon because Bass Reeves needed to find Nat Love to let him know that Buck was getting out of jail, he could just have heard that Buck got broken out of jail, and we sort of know where he's going. And I'm Bass Reeves, and my job is to go get him. Do you want to come get him with me?
Because we've already established that he has this tacit relationship with Love. Of the two of them, know each other. Yeah. They've dealt with each other, but clearly, like, they aren't. There's a relationship there of mutual respect. And so,
right.
Yeah, it's, I don't, they don't really care for each other, but they respect each other. And they know that they're somewhat at odds with each other, but there is that level of professional respect.
Which boils down to like the ultimate thing is that it's like, I don't believe Idris Elba's thesis of he's turned Love completely bad, because clearly he's good enough to not be immediately arrested and actually taken to prison by the marshal. And he still has the relationship with the marshal at the end. Which isn't to say that Idris Elba was saying all these things because obviously he's coming from the wrong place, but you know, that stuff was the stuff that bothered me. Everything visually was great.
Right. It's a really well-constructed film except for the way that the events of the movie follow each other.
I don't know what to do. I usually have stuff to complain about, and I just have to sit here and watch all of you have the fun I usually have with these types of movies.
I was about to say, Frank, you look like somebody who you know, somebody just had their PB&J rained on.
I think I settled in to watch an Appaloosa, a long Western about race, and it's heavy, and I'm gonna feel bad.
Yeah,
and I was just, this was so, I think I cannot remember being this forgiving in the past, because it was just so right what I wanted to watch in the moment without even realizing it. So all that stuff, it was just like every single thing this movie did, I was just like, yeah, no, keep going. This is awesome. This is so cool. The guns look awesome. The music is crazy good, and I normally don't like modern music in like a period piece movie unless it's like stylized like this, and this is crazy good beat after beat.
So the music was really cool. Because it's a majority, it's got like a very Rasta through line.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So Jess always has us watch movies with subtitles on. So oh it was God. Really cool, especially in the music bits, though, to see like the lyrics being that very Caribbean, very you know, it's not English, but it's sort of a combination of a bunch of different languages. It was very, very cool to see that influence as the through line to the film. And I need to look up the music to see, you know, the meaning of the lyrics. Yeah. But it was really, really cool to have that background as the scene setting material.
A lot of it was composed by James Samuel, the director. And I like the Western, like it's Western with a twist in some aspects too, where like especially that train robbery sequence is great. I also watched the movie with subtitles, and Peter, I don't know if you noticed this too, but some of the things that made me chuckle is when it would just do emotional string music playing. It's like, yes. You know, I wouldn't have known that this was an emotional scene if I didn't read the fact that there was emotional string music playing. Because if it was playful string music, then that would have thrown off everything.
We do have to note too that one of the other producers on this movie is Jay-Z, is Sean Carter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously the music has to be spot on for him to put his stamp on this as well.
I didn't know what Jay-Z goes by, but I knew he produced this, and I saw the names of like the producers, and I'm like, you're hiding in here somewhere. Don't know which you are, but that's cool. Man, I also I got a little worried about, like, yes, the love interest gets captured in like borderline tire to railroad tracks kind of way. And I was a little, the one thing I would have probably changed, if anything, is like, well, that's Jonathan Majors gets captured there. And then all the people that he's been alienating, trying to run away from, have to come together. You can do that, but whatever. Then they do the girl fight thing. And yes. I was like, oh, I'm a little nervous about this. But that was like one of the best choreographed fight scenes I've seen in forever. That, like, it reminded me of, I know this is going to make it sound like I'm watering it down, but like the Pineapple Express fight, where it's just like so it's so brutal and like epic, and the it's so well choreographed, but it's like blunt around the edges. They got the coolest action scene in the movie.
One, I saw that girl fight coming from the opening credits, where each gang has a girl. B,
that's why I was worried.
Hard disagree, Frank. Hard disagree. The fight was sloppily choreographed, sloppily edited, sloppily shot.
What did I watch?
I don't know.
What happened?
I don't know.
Frank, you had a much more fun experience than the rest of us. Yeah. Like, I'm a little jealous that I wasn't able to.
You should be asking my advice. Yeah.
Exactly. So here's
the only
thing.
One on my side is the blood-sucking lawyer.
Don't, Connor, don't tell me here's the thing. I invented here's the thing, okay?
I was the here's the thing guy on my podcast. Anyways, we're gonna have to battle for the title of here's the thing. Anyways, I saw the trailer for the movie a few weeks ago, and what I saw was in that trailer a 90-minute action movie that's just like nonstop fighting, sort of like and the initial gunfights in the movie between both the train robbery. And when they kill the Crimson Hood guys coming through the canyon, says to me like almost like John Wick levels of planning and execution in the way the combat's going to go.
Gun fu.
And you get a lot of that in the first half of the movie. Again, the second the last third of the movie, everything gets a lot looser in a way that I found less than satisfying. And like, you're right, that fight scene is a brutal knockdown drag-out fight, but it wasn't a brutal knockdown drag-out fight in the way that I had hoped for. Like, you know, when Zazie Beetz sort of like takes her shotgun, breaks it open, pulls the shells out and throws it away, what I would have loved to have seen her do is have the shotgun pointed at
Regina King,
break it open, pull the shotguns out, and then like throw it up in the air and grab it like a club, and then go to town like that. Because Regina King has this like weird knife chain.
I have an all bold chain knife.
Which is like, it's like a style, that's like a stylized thing that doesn't exist, implies some sort of like martial arts fight. It's just the elements just aren't coming together in a way that I found.
Has anybody
satisfying.
Here seen The Man with the Iron Fist?
That oh, yes. Oh,
Pete,
yes.
Peter and I and a friend of the pod, Stu, watched that at 14th Street in New York City, drunk.
Oh.
But off
like,
our ass.
Holy
when
shit.
When watching that last fight, that was something that entered my mind of like,
very
Man much. The Iron Fist of like, we're doing, like, it's chain knife? Sure, it's cool. Like, just go with it. And
yeah,
and
exactly.
If the tone was consistent over the course of the entire film, that was what it was. Like, not unlike Man with the Iron Fist.
What the fuck is this movie? I don't know this movie. This looks awesome.
We might have to watch.
We're doing this at some point. Yeah,
I think we just found another match choice.
I think I might have a Western blind spot, and I'm realizing
this isn't.
I
Man with the Iron Fist. I wouldn't call a Western.
No, I don't know. That's a whole. That's like Northern. I don't know what that is. But
I'm just gonna go ahead and put Man with the Iron Fist on our movie list.
It is kind of like though the Regina King Zazie Bites fight was just directed by the RZA.
Yes. No. That's like, yes. Exactly that. Where it's just like, oh yeah, this is why, you know, it's cool for cool's sake, and the technical pieces of it didn't come together the way that we might not all have hoped.
Is this like Winky, this movie? Is this like, what's the one I always think of? The Good, the Bad, and the Weird is one
of them.
A lot of this is
Wink and Nod, and it's, you're...
Have you heard of The Good, the Bad, and the Weird? I think that's what it's called. Okay.
I haven't seen it, but I am aware of it. This
wonderful.
Is, at least to me, this is very much, we're going to hit all of the things about the Western, and the tension for me was, are they going to subvert that or are they just going to go with it? And more often than not, they just went with it, which is fine because, again, for the most part, it's visually entertaining. But plot beat wise, story wise, I knew exactly how this was going to roll from the beginning of every set piece and sequence. So, but that's because I've watched a lot of Westerns and because I know some of these things pretty, you know.
So that's part of it is like, the all black cast aside, the fact that we get like a modern day classic, like not modern, well, made recently, like classic Western is just such a, I don't know. It was just like, and maybe I've just been on a kick with this, with like, I watched The Mummy recently and like a bunch of like more like tropey kind of like going, hitting, checking a bunch of boxes movies. But like, goddamn, every other Western I can think of since the 90s has like some, it's like, oh, it's a Western, but it's also this. So you know, you can't quite get a full, like every Western's watered down with something else. And the fact that this was just so by the numbers and was so fucking like this, like made me feel how I imagine like Sergio Leone movies made people feel when they first came out, where it's like, oh shit, this is so badass and so over the top in a crazy way where, yes, a lot of the stuff's been done before, but I don't know. I kind of stopped watching it through. I legit, cards on the table. I didn't take a single note. I just sat there with like
great.
A pad and paper on my lap and just watched the whole movie start to finish.
Yeah, I don't have...
Which is how you should watch this.
Oh, totally. And
yeah.
I don't have a... Like, tropes are there for a reason. Like, there are certain tropes... Like, we have tropes because they're... That's how you tell stories. What I think bothered me, and again, we're all talking subjective shit, so like it clearly bothered me and Connor more than it bothered you, but like a Western will generally pick three of those tropes. This movie picked 14 and did all of them and didn't necessarily execute them poorly, but executed them exactly within the letter of the law. And so if you're going into it looking for the story side of things, then it, to me, it doesn't hold up as well as when you're just along for the ride, like we've been talking about.
Yeah. And it in some cases, it executed them at the expense of the story. Question for the group. The movie begins very much on purpose with the words, "These people were all real." Looking through their various Wikipedia pages, in no way do these people's life stories reflect what we saw in
that
the
tracks.
Film.
No.
I would like to know your thoughts on that.
It is not far off from like a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen kind of like thing. I know those are fictional characters, but I am all for like all for a movie where you take any like Wild Bill Hickok and wow, I can't think of any
Wyatt
other
Earp.
Calamity
Paul,
Wyatt, Jane,
Paul
Wyatt Earp.
Bunyan.
You do, yeah, yeah.
John Henry, Pecos Bill, yeah.
Yeah, you do the Avengers of the West.
Tall Tales?
Mm. Oh, Tall Tales.
There's a movie that we got to put on the list.
Wasn't ooh, that, Tombstone? That would, what was Tombstone? Was that? Was that
was Wyatt Earp.
But,
his,
but Tombstone is the shootout at the OK Corral, which is a thing that happened.
Yeah, that's yes. that movie's okay, more okay, of a historical okay. drama than it
I
is
thought
a
there
Western.
Was another one. Is it Young Guns? Am I
Young Guns.
This is one that's
oh,
like,
the Billy the Kid story? That's very
that's
much
Billy
fabricated.
The Kid. I guess Deadwood. Yeah. Well, Deadwood is what I'm thinking of.
Deadwood, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there is a tradition of taking guys like Wyatt Earp and, well, Bill Hickok and
Buffalo
guys
Bill.
Like that and making completely fictional stories about yeah. their exploits
yeah.
In history. So when I was watching it yesterday, I was a little bit uncomfortable with it, but as I've sort of had time to sort of sit and stew in it, I guess I'm feeling better about it.
That part never bothered me because I watch a lot of horror movies, and a lot of horror movies start with based on true events or inspired by real things or whatever the fuck. And it's just like, true. Yeah, okay. and it's the Fargo thing of it. It's right. a storytelling tool you can use that makes the audience a little bit more engaged for the purpose of telling that story. And so I wasn't too bugged by it.
Well, and I think it gives you the opportunity to go back and look these people up.
Oh yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Like the fact that we have these people's names on our minds now gives us maybe a certain perception that isn't entirely accurate. But for the people that really care about that thing, you have the opportunity to go back up and read about, you know, who those people actually were and, you know, furthering your knowledge of history and all that fun stuff.
Like, yeah. Nat Love's life story is actually way cooler than what the movie suggests.
I'll say it like this. I prefer this to what is kind of the flip side of the coin, which is like the Clive Owen King Arthur movie, where it's like, yes. You're purposely trying to fool me into thinking this is historical. And right. That's your hook to the movie when you have nothing, you're basing it on nothing the same way this movie's basing it on nothing, but at least this movie up front is like, none of this really happened. These are real people. It's basically just saying like, Google these names after the movie. That's that.
Yeah.
That is, might as well what that title
and because I guess Connor, you were looking them up. We're Jonathan Majors and Star Trek Ezra Elba's characters actually brothers in real life?
No, absolutely
so,
no way.
So the Rufus Bucks page just goes to the Rufus Buck gang, which did a lot of really awful shit. But Cherokee Bill did run with them.
Gotcha.
So,
were they him and Love actually related, or is there any evidence of that, or was that just a story contrived?
No, I mean,
I don't see that.
They weren't even. I don't even know if they were around at the same time. Because
I was just curious.
Nat Love
is 54 to 21.
Yeah, so like Nat Love would have been like around during the time that the Buck Gang was doing their thing, but I think he was like north of where the Buck Gang was.
They're close, Oklahoma and Tennessee, I think.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm sorry. When the Buck Gang was doing their thing in 1895, Nat Love was working as a Pullman porter in Denver.
Okay, then.
So he was on trains.
Nat Love lived a long time for anyone at that time, but also an outlaw. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't an outlaw. Nat Love was like a cowboy, and
does everybody know the etymology of that too?
He was born a slave, or born enslaved. The Civil War happens when he's about 10 years old. Then him and his family became sharecroppers. His father died, and Nat started working breaking horses.
But Nat Love shot at people. And people shot back at him.
It was the Old West. Everyone shot everyone.
Well, that's a long time to live while bullets are going to and from you.
No, actually, no. I mean, he was just a cowboy. He walked. So he wandered around the West and like did cow, like literal cow drives, and eventually.
We're also dealing with like the split of what a modern person thinks of as a cowboy versus what an actual cowboy was.
He apparently crossed paths with Billy the Kid, Pat Garrett, and Bette Masterson, who are all people who did shoot people, but I don't think Nat Love actually did.
But didn't Nat Love is like the he kind of like pushed for his own memoir where we don't know, like he came up with his own stories legend. A bit. I thought that was part of it too, where he kind of Wolf of Wall Streeted himself.
I mean, that's the Buffalo Bill thing too. That's common for,
which is fine. Yeah. I don't have a problem with it. I think that was part. It's the it's that Pancho Villa movie with Antonio Banderas. Isn't that the exact thing where he's like faking a film footage of what he was doing?
Oh, I don't even know this.
Am I misremembering this? He was in like it's like a long title where like Antonio Banderas plays Pancho Villa, but he has like a film crew filming like fake things he was doing as if to like document how cool he was. I think that was what that movie was.
But yeah. I, like I said, the historical accuracy is out the window the moment that from Go. I mean, it's a Western, so it's not going to be historically accurate.
right.
But, like I said, I was along for the ride, and there are definitely parts of it that bugged me, though.
This movie, I'm finding this conversation interesting because this movie has elicited different sets of expectations from all of us in a way, in ways that I don't necessarily think it would if it was the same movie with all completely white cast. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, I would think so. Well, because if it was an all white cast, I think we would just treat it as a classical Western and be.
Right.
Yeah, I'd probably not be as forgiving of those tropes because, like I said, the angle is the fact that like a group of people that has been marginalized in this genre is reclaiming the genre and all of the tropes that come with it. So I think that's part of the I was like cheering for black actors to finally not play the field hand on the side. Like they get to be all the whole cast. And the fact that there's like, there isn't it. Like, it's also not one of the movies that has like a white writer director attached. It's like literally start to finish. It's this full, like brilliantly made creative project.
Yeah. Well, and I'm realizing now, like it was that element that made me feel uncomfortable with the fact that they were using the names of real people but not telling their stories because you know, like I said, they do that shit with Wyatt Earp and Bill Hickok all the time.
I wouldn't be more or less forgiving
I'm interested in my own reaction, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, it's kind of the same thing too, is there's a movie that came out recently about it. It's like there was One Night in Miami where like Muhammad Ali and like all these major black creators and
directed by Regina King.
And they were all in one place at a time.
Really?
And it's like, what if something happened? And it might even be in sort of an Ocean's 11 style thing, but like, I'm totally cool with having a fun story that involves all these very interesting historical figures in it.
I do know that movie that I think it happened One Night in Miami, whatever it's called. The truth of it is those four people were in Miami that same night.
Yes.
And it's like, wouldn't it be cool if they all got together and like had like a, you know, so there's more. They started taking liberties further into the historical part than this movie does, where it's like you're killing people and you're reassigning who was related to who and you're doing a whole bunch of different things to really rewrite versus like, everyone's life in that movie still happens the same way. And here is like a moment where all four of these people like hit pause at the same time, did something off to the side, and then went back and lived the lives that we know them to have lived.
Yeah. No, One Night Miami.
I don't know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. No, you're right. One Night Miami is much, much more concerned with the historical significance of the four people that it's portraying than The Harder They Fall is. Yeah. The Harder They Fall is here to be a fun popcorn flick. One Night Miami is there to have a conversation.
it's also engaging in like myth making and legend making.
Oh yeah,
you know, I think this movie is like we're gonna make these African American cowboys as cool as Wyatt Earp and Wild Bill Hickok.
But so let me go a little further with Connor. What you're saying is like, okay, let's say a lot of those stuff on that Wikipedia page is fabricated anyway to begin with, because like it was a long time ago. Nobody knows who anyone. Nobody. Half the shit you read about the pirates and half the shit you read about like outlaws is like probably made up stuff that they can't you know necessarily prove one way or the other. Does it matter if they like that stuff? Is that stuff more true because it was like a lie back then versus like a lie now about them, or the fact that they chose to make those stories up, or like where like you're getting like it gets interesting with like, okay, well, why is it more okay to make a movie about something we know to be false, but it's part of the legend from like think about like I feel like didn't we have a conversation about Robin Hood not far long ago
did Robin Hood
the
Prince
parts
of
the story. Oh Prince of Thieves with Mike Lacy about like everything in Robin Hood's probably made up, but like the further back you get, it feels like you're being more historically accurate because you're using older lies, and there's something interesting about that. And and we talked about like the fact that like things are now brought into the legend where like nowadays, like Robin Hood being in the Crusades is like kind of part of the legend, and it never used to be. And it's like, okay, is that now in ink on the pages, or like what, like where does it become? And I think it's a really interesting thread to pull on, which is like, where is the respect to give
it's like that moment in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, the episode Once More Into the Breach, where everybody's talking about the battle at the Alamo and whether or not Davy Crockett actually died in a last stand with everybody, and everybody's talking about whether it really happened or not, and Worf just says, the only question is whether you believe in the legend of Davy Crockett or not. If you do, there should be no doubt in your mind he died a hero's death. If you do not believe the legend, then he was just a man, and it does not matter how he died.
Yeah. It's a little bit of the discussion between things that are real and things that are true, and where that line actually sits.
Well, so in my mind, it's picking up on the Robin Hood thing, but also the legends of the West were formed by reporters going out west and basically embellishing the stories of the people that were out there to sell papers, and the people that actually did that writing their own books and embellishing those stories too. I think looking back to the original legends, the way that they were formed, the value isn't so much that you get closer to the truth so much as you get closer to the minds of the people that made up those legends. They put Robin Hood in the Crusades because they needed a place for him to be. But like the original, what does the original story of Robin Hood as was made up by people 1,000 years ago in Britain or France or wherever, what does that story say about the people that were telling that story?
Exactly.
And you know, to me, that's the more interesting thing to look at.
Yeah. And
then debating whether or not a thing.
And I think it doesn't matter necessarily with regards to this story. It boils down to, are you telling a meaningful story?
At the end of the day, I agree, Matt. And to leapfrog on that, like whatever we need to say so that I can watch Idris Elba punch gold teeth out of someone's mouth.
Yeah.
And give it to the children of the village in this weird, like, whatever we, however we get there, I'm
that
good.
That scene was so fucking good. That scene was, everything,
that's excellent.
Everything Idris Elba does up until the point where he, like, tells Nat that he's his brother is fucking spot on and fantastic.
I texted Peter
while I was watching this last night. If I'm ever in Idris Elba's presence and he looks at me and does not smile, I will shoot myself.
There is also, to be fair, there is a version of this where Idris Elba is just fucking with him there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't prove it. Come out with a piece of paper and say, you're not the brother. Like, there's no thing there, like he
but
just
that
says
only
it
works
and fucks
yeah.
with
like
Matt.
It would only works as a twist if at some point you find out that he was lying, because pretty like the setup of the beginning is clearly one of the people that this one of this kid's parents crossed his character at some point in time. We just don't know the history. We're going to believe kind of whatever he says about what started this whole cycle of violence.
Yeah. I mean, if I was going to fix a flick the movie, which I'm not going to, cause it's not, what's not the set.
Give it five first podcasting. And then,
my 5 minute mark. Oh, it's, when the priest comes in to collect his thing and he thinks he's talking to some other priest and that love turns around and it's just awesome and terrifying. Yeah. His performance in that scene setting the bar for the rest of the movie is so,
yep.
Yeah.
So good. And the way that they do the kill is also excellent with the edits and the 1, 2, 3, 4 thing. But if I was going to fix it, Idris Elba would. There is a version of this movie where Idris Elba's character is more fully drawn, where his brutality is much more tied to some sort of desperation. Because the big question of the movie that I don't fully understand is what is Buck
and want? That's something that's alluded to but never really visited upon is the fact that like. The white folk are coming and they are going to take what they want. And he, at least at the outset, you think that what he's doing is to be able to create his own autonomy so that he can fight off whatever's coming. And everybody's talking about it. There's a flood coming and all this other stuff, but it never gets explored beyond that. So it kind of falls flat after that point.
If anything, the movie presents a world where white people are very defanged and the minority in the West. So they seem like they're not actually interested in presenting you can't do both. You can't have the movie be this like all black everywhere in every town and then have like a little element of like some very like comical white characters and also have it be like, we're going to lose our way of life kind of thing. I know it's a little bit of the metaphor of like the old West dying piece is in there a touch. And I think it's more like, honestly, like Connor and Matt, you guys are saying where it's like, I think it's checking a box for the sake of checking the box where it's like our way of life is ending unless the bad guy who does bad things for a good reason can like become a little bit of like this like small nation king.
Yeah. Well, and like you could play it as like Idris Elba, but like if the idea of like he's trying to protect him and his from whatever's coming his way of like, you know, this great land grab or whatever. And maybe he kills Love's dad because Love's dad was colluding with some white landowner or whoever who was selling people's plots off without anybody knowing. Like you can come up with something where it's like you have crossed a line that I am not going to let you. I'm not going to forgive you for.
And it feels feels like the movie just is not interested in that conversation. Like it doesn't really want to get into that, which I can appreciate because I mean, you know, I love the bank scene, but you know that would not be lost in like you know that could be straight out of Blazing Saddles. Oh, yeah. So I mean, it's hilarious, you know. Yeah. But yeah, to your point, you know, white people are never. At least the scene threat, you know, and not even really alluded to much outside of that particular scene.
I do love how the banker helps them carry the money out of the bank. It's just a little element that I really enjoy that he was just like, you know, he just sort of grew to like them over the course of the robbery. I would have liked to have seen that element that like they were going to tax the town and all that stuff sort of I would have liked to see that be drawn out to the end as opposed to the twist. And you know, if you had gone back and instead of Love's father being Buck's father, he was just a guy that stole money and retired from crime, and that's the way Buck handles that particular problem. And he, you know, and the thing of him marking him with the cross so he can see him coming, first of all, I read that in that scene and loved it. And you can totally make up an excuse of just like, you know, I didn't want to, you know, you had nothing to do with it. It wasn't your fault. But I wanted to make sure I could see you coming just in case.
And some of that exploration may also be just a COVID casualty of there were ideas in the beginning right. that just yeah. couldn't get followed through after 6 months.
Yeah. I would have loved to have seen a non-COVID interrupted version of this.
I wonder
movie.
If we can find the March 2020 script, whatever it was That's at true. The time. That'd be interesting.
Maybe. Yeah.
I'd like.
And by the way, I've talked a lot about like flaws of this movie. It's a flawed film, but I enjoyed watching it.
Well, I mean, would anybody not recommend this movie?
I'd highly recommend this movie.
Yeah,
I have while I was watching it to several people.
For I think we all love this movie at its core. We just want it to be that much better.
Yeah, like, that's exactly what it is for me. Where it's like, I really like this movie. I would love to polish off some of the rough edges.
And it's a low barrier of entry. It's on Netflix. Like,
yes.
Everyone has someone's Netflix account. It's really, if you have two and a half hours.
I think it's, for this. It's just one last thing I want to kind of touch on, then we can wrap up, where it's like, I think for me, maybe this is where I'm coming at. I'm just trying to think of like why I'm less, I looked at it through less of a critical lens, is like, I think, I said before I jumped into it, I'm like, okay, the only thing I know is like, this isn't my story to tell. It's like a whole bunch of creatives and a whole, like a whole group of people that have been marginalized. And it's like, I think I just put my sort of like how I would tinker with it cap aside subconsciously.
Yeah.
And was just like watching it through. This is the least critical I've kind of watched a movie in a long time. And I hope that that's a kind of okay way to watch through it. Or if I'm calling attention to it in a way that I shouldn't be, and I should sort of like treat it normally. But I just, it wasn't kind of my movie to touch or fix really. And that's, I think that's where my head ended up with it, and why I just like sat back and like let every twist, as telegraphed as it was, kind of just like hit me the way they wanted it to.
No, I respect that view. And honestly, I kind of wish I had a similar viewing, I guess. Because this is not this is a movie that can be nitpicked, but you know, I'm also a person that is generally anti nitpick, picking nits. So
I will say
I appreciate that point of view, Frank. Is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely, and I will say I think I certainly watch movies with a different lens when I'm getting ready to talk about it on the podcast versus just trying to watch it and enjoy it, and for this movie. For anybody out there listening, you should absolutely go in without that critical hat on, because you're going to have a much better time than the nits that we're picking here for sure. So
I also don't watch the trailer apparently.
Or
avoid the trailer. You know, it's the movie's on Netflix.
I also watched it with Katie, so I was screwed from the start.
Oh man.
Awesome.
All right.
So I think we're good. Any more for any more?
I have spoken my piece.
I think it gets a hearty recommend. Hearty recommend from all of us. Really cool, really fun film. Go give it a shot and let us know what you think. You know, are we right to pick these nits? Should we have been less critical? I think we want to hear from you guys too. And,
this would be a great time to have come up with a sign-off.
This concludes another episode of No Flicks Given. We have given no flicks, but we hope that you give some for us.
Like and subscribe.
Ooh, it's there. You're mining in the right place.
We're close.
It's close. That's something.
We'll workshop it.